The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Wednesday, January 9th, 2008. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. In agricultural news, the GAO says the nation's transportation system is not keeping up with growing distribution needs. Also, the EU is facing a WTO deadline to explain why it's taking so long to approve biotech imports. I'll have details of these and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will be by to discuss University of Illinois efforts to eradicate cyst nematode. It's all on the Wednesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Wednesday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. March wheat, $8.89, down 20 and a quarter. July, $8.24 and a half, down 15 and a half. At the Board of Trade on LaSalle Street, March wheat, $8.89 and a half, down 18. May, $9.02 and a half, down 18. July, $7.91, down 18. March corn, $4.77 and a quarter, down 1 and a half. May, $4.89, down 1. July, $4.98 and 3 quarters, down 3 quarters. December, $4.95, down 1. January beans, $12.49, down 7 and a half. March, $12.62 and a half, down 4 and a half. May, $12.80, down 6. November, $11.84, up 3. January soybean meal, $3.42.50, down $4. January soybean oil, $50.70, up 19. February live cattle, $93.27 and a half, down 80. January feeders, $115, down 7 and a half. February lean hogs, $56.52 and a half, up 65 on the day. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Dave, and a tip of the hat for the good meetings this week at Clifton and Decatur, Illinois. It was a lot of fun and a lot of good questions came out, and hopefully we gave some answers, too, to nice people.
And we do want to pass along some information during this broadcast of what we learned from those meetings. Before we do that, Paul, we ought to go to the futures market, though, and look at the wheat pit, which looks like the indexed fund rebalancing is happening in earnest now.
It sure does, Dave. You know, it was basically been rumored to have, the wheat restructuring and reallocation, rebalancing for quite some time. We've been talking about, India and buying wheat for a strategic reserve, basically put about $2 a bushel in the wheat fluff, so to speak, on the wheat on the top side, and for their strategic reserve, and they've basically have kind of backed out of the marketplace, so to speak. We know that Argentina's harvesting wheat and also Australia, and the crop seems to be good to excellent both in those countries. And as a result of that, we're going to start to see more wheat come into the open marketplace. This rebalancing, of course, is significant in the fact that they're reducing supplies instead of increasing supplies. And it's been hinted here in the U.S. and around the world that the wheat acreage, particularly in North America and the Northern Hemisphere, has been increased. And I think this also encourages some very caution notes as well. And then at the same time early this morning, Goldman Sachs, I guess we have to say and give them the gold medal of the premier money center trading firms in New York, is saying, a recession, if it does occur, also hurts commodities and the stock. So that was a cautionary flag, and I think that you could tell definitely there wasn't the urgency to buy corn, soybeans, and wheat and other commodities in today's trade.
Yeah, and we saw some follow-through off of yesterday's down moves in both the Dow and the S&P 500, breaking some midterm long trend lines and then following through on those yesterday. So as Goldman Sachs suggests, at least in the short term, it does appear that grain commodities and equities are still tied at the hip.
That's right. And one of the things that has encouraged this strength in the commodities, of course, is the Federal Reserve lowering interest rates, the Fed pumping money into the money supply to prevent a major slowdown and as a result of the subprime housing problem. And you can definitely find that commodities were very strong whenever the dollar weakens, and as a result of that, that encourages buying, particularly by commodity funds. The dollar was stronger today. We did see, even though some strength in the gold and silver market and the stock market, we did see late weakness in corn, soybeans, and wheat.
One thing about the index funds I wanted to ask you, once an index fund goes ahead and rebalances a commodity, and then they're going to take that money and reinvest it potentially, is there a time frame that they typically have? Because obviously today, if you look at the board, with wheat being down and then also corn and beans being down, you wouldn't think that they did any real buying of those commodities today.
Yeah. You know, the general impression I have is of course they. These funds do rebalance, and the shareholders or the traders actually get statements at a certain date. And my general impression is, and I'm guessing here, mm-hmm. is that there's some commodity fund stock traded groups that you can actually buy a share, and those are, have a certain percentage of corn, soybeans, or crude oil, or energy complex commodities. So it's different for every particular group. My general impression is that the dollar amount is actually paid out in dividends, and the commissions, are allocated to the bonuses if there's profits to the actual trading firm. So. And there are management fees that are taken out. And I would imagine if everybody would read those prospectuses, they do have some pretty good legitimate answers. But I think there's so many different ones out there, Dave, that it's hard mm-hmm. to give a general answer.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and then talk a little bit about the Outlook meetings that we had the last couple of days in Clifton and Decatur. One of the fun things about those Outlook meetings is not only hearing the questions that we get from producers, but actually being able to ask producers a few questions, and I thought that was pretty enlightening, Paul.
Yeah, we had two major seed companies over in Decatur, and of course the one company basically said their interpretation of their seed sales in 12 states is up 15% in soybeans. We've also ask a question is how many people have decided if normal weather occurs what their planting ratios would be, and they say 80 to 90% of them say it's in stone. Out of that group, we found that 30 or 40% of the group probably will plant a few more soybeans, and of course very active soybean seed sales because of double crop bean in wheat areas, but also in the south half of the state and Indiana and Ohio, where fertilizer prices and other inputs have just exploded. We also, Wayne talked about the small fertilizer companies basically running out of inventory, and then when prices jumped and their cupboards were bare, it was hard to replace that inventory. And, of course, we did talk about some tremendous wheat feedings going on in the U.S. The other one that you mentioned earlier this morning, and it was appropriate, is the the germination in soybean seed seems to be disappointing. Sometimes they go out and test the germ. It's good, but after further processing with lower moisture levels, the germ has dropped. But there does seem to be, you know, the seed industry is extremely innovative, and they will get seed somewhere to supply the demand. It might not be the planting date what people want or the variety, but there'll be a lot of soybean seed available in the marketplace.
What is your best estimate of how many soybean acres in this battle for acres have been bought at the current pricing levels?
Well, all the informer groups are indicating 70 million acres of soybeans planted, which is almost 7 million acres. And, of course, the stone people are beating the drum that corn is still going to be king in a lot of areas. And that's true. But my general impression is I think the 70 million acres is up a couple of million acres more, maybe 72, 71 and a half. After the fertilizer and all these other costs and the extra double crop wheat. So we think it's a bigger soybean number. I don't know if that's being traded in Chicago yet. I don't think it is, because I think there's a lot of traders wanting to continue to pour gasoline on the bid war and the break, you know, the actual planting ratios between corn and soybeans. The corn number, I think, is the average guess is somewhere in that 87.5 million acres, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised that's a little smaller. The wheat acreage, I think, is up, you know, 64 million. I wouldn't be a bit surprised that's not up to 66.5 million acres when it's all said and done. I think there was just a lot more wheat over a lot of the South that was put into soft red winter wheat.
Thank you, Paul.
Have a profitable day, and always nice talking to you, Dave.
You too. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Taking a look at Ed Kieser's two-state forecast tonight, he says partly to mostly cloudy, lows ranging from 27 in northeastern Indiana to 37 in far southern Illinois. Tomorrow in northwestern Illinois, cloudy with rain and snow arriving and then changing to all snow. In north central, northeastern, and west central Illinois, cloudy with rain showers arriving, mixing with wet snow during the afternoon. Elsewhere, cloudy with rain showers arriving and highs ranging from 33 degrees in far northwestern Illinois to 55 degrees in the far south. In agricultural news, a government report released yesterday concluded that the nation's transportation infrastructure is not keeping up with business shipping demands. The report says Congress needs to work with freight stakeholders to develop long-term solutions. The GAO study concluded there is a widening gap between the volume of goods being shipped and trucking capacity. The report projects the volume of goods moving across the U.S. by truck is expected to double by 2035, and railroad volume is expected to increase by 88% in that same time frame. The European Union faces a WTO deadline this week to accept more imports of GMO food and feed. If the EU fails to change its policies, the U.S. may decide to ask the WTO to formally investigate the EU approval process. If the WTO sides with the U.S., it could result in trade retaliation. Meanwhile, a delegation of U.S. senators are in the EU this week, visiting Morocco, Turkey, the Czech Republic, and Spain. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says GMO crops are at the top of his talking points.
The breakdown of the EU's approval process for biotech products has blocked most exports of U.S. corn to the European Union, and this de facto moratorium is, of course, inconsistent with WTO rules. Spanish consumers are more accepting of agricultural biotechnology, and the Czech Republic is one of the more pragmatic countries in the EU on this issue. So the U.S. needs Spain and the Czech Republic to be more engaged in trying to influence the European Union on biotechnology and agriculture.
Grassley also wants discussions on import of U.S. pork into the EU and required testing of U.S. pork products.
Right now, only three U.S. pork plants are approved for shipping pork to the European Union. As members of the European Union, both Spain and the Czech Republic have input into these EU decisions. My message for officials in these two countries is that action is needed to change EU pork policies that harm U.S. producers.
Grassley says thus far the 2007 Farm Bill has not been a point of discussion, but he says if asked by EU members, he'll tell them that the U.S. will become WTO compliant when foreign markets are opened to free trade. A five-year University of Nebraska-Lincoln study says switchgrass produces 540% more energy than what is needed to grow the perennial grass. The study found that growing switchgrass produces an even larger net energy gain than previously thought because the biomass remaining after processing can provide energy for the distilling process and other power requirements of a switchgrass to ethanol plant. The study also found that greenhouse gas emissions from ethanol made with switchgrass were 94% lower than estimated greenhouse gas emissions from gasoline production. Still, study authors say producers will need financial incentives to grow switchgrass instead of corn. A recent study from Iowa State University says producers would consider changing to switchgrass from corn at $110 a ton with yields of 4 tons to the acre. Acting USDA Secretary Chuck Connors says he's hopeful that the House Senate Farm Bill Conference Committee will draft a bill the president can sign.
In its current form, both the House and the Senate versions of this bill would result in myself as well as every other senior advisor to the president recommending that he not sign it. But again, having said that, I believe, and the feedback I'm getting from the members that I'm talking to is that we can resolve these differences and have a good bill that the president will enthusiastically sign and get it out there for the producers because it's time to get it done.
House lawmakers return to Washington, D.C. on January 15th. The Senate goes into session on January 22nd. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
The soybean breeder at the University of Illinois has been looking for cyst nematode resistance. As Todd Gleason reports, the search has been successful, and so has the breeding program.
Most of the soybeans that claim cyst nematode resistance get that genetic code from a single source. It's PI88788. The soybean cyst nematode is a pest of the bean crop that can rob farmers of yield, and they don't even know it's disappearing. The nematode works underground on the root of the plant. Those farmers that do know about the pest often use resistant varieties to combat the nematode, most of which, again, gain that resistance from the same source, PI88788. University of Illinois soybean breeder Brian Deers says those farmers and the industry have gone to the same well once too many times.
What the nematologists are finding is that a lot of the nematodes in the state have basically adapted to that source of resistance. And therefore, they're able to now reproduce on these resistant varieties. So we're using some other sources of resistance that give stronger resistance to especially these nematodes that can overcome the 88788 resistance. We've made some progress with this. We've got some experimental lines now that have combined this new source of resistance with good yield. That's been the problem that people have been facing is that they've been using other sources of resistance, but they haven't been able to get that resistance combined with high yield, which is what the farmers really want.
The new source of resistance is called PI437654. That one has a common name, too. It is Hartwig.
We're also doing some work with a different source of resistance, which is wild soybeans, and we've been able to map a couple genes from wild soybeans that also give resistance. And we're doing some experiments where we're combining genes from these various sources, and it appears that by combining these genes, the effects of these genes act together additively so that we can hopefully get strong, durable resistance by combining these glycine soja or wild soybean genes with, let's say, the 88788 genes.
The wild soybeans were gathered in China and are housed in the USDA soybean germplasm collection on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. The collection is one of 30 that is part of the National Plant Germplasm System. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with our look at the cash grain market is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon, Kay.
Well, a fine afternoon to you too, Dave.
I'll tell you what, as sunny as can be out there, you would think it's 70 degrees or something.
Well, it's in the upper 40s. I have not been out today, and some people are saying it's really nice out there. Others are saying it's a little chilly, so I'll let you know the next time I talk to you how it was when I leave work this evening.
All I know is the weather has been bizarre this week.
Very.
Let's go ahead and look at the cash grain market, where I suppose volatility might be a word we might be using.
It's just a really different kind of market, uncharted waters, you know, 11-year highs in corn and 34 in beans, and producers just really don't know what to do. And a lot of them who are really good about forward contracting are kind of lamenting, you know, about some of the contracts they've already done. So they're getting a little cautious with the market, watching it very closely. And as we rally, like we saw yesterday, then they'll come back and they'll contract some. And then when it fades back, they go away. And so, yeah, it's just something we're just going to have to, it's going to be trial and error from here forth, I think.
The folks that you're working, do they like the cash or forward or the hedge to arrive better one or the other?
There has not been one person, really and truthfully, ask me about hedge to arrives. They seem to be pretty content with flat prices. You know, we're using some pretty cheap basis levels out into next year because who knows what they're going to be. And, of course, the elevators are going to have to, you know, cover all their hedges. So things are going to be different with these prices that we're seeing. But believe it or not, there's not a lot of interest in HTAs, and I think everybody's going to put charges on them. But for right now, they're very content with flat price.
So a lot of cash forward. How on an average basis, if you can share with us, are folks cash forwarding their contracts? 10%, 20%, 30%? Where are they?
I don't think they're maybe even 20%. I mean, some have been booking all along, and others haven't sold anything. So if you lump all your big producers together, I would say they're not much more than maybe 15% sold, and that's slowing down all the time because, you know, they're all talking $5 or $6 corn, $15 beans, and so they're just going to keep an eye on this. But, no, there are a lot of forward contracts, but not nearly as much as you think when you put them all together.
Hmm. What about your prices for today?
All right, cash corn today is $4.54, cash beans $12.01, and new crop wheat today is $7.06.
What about fall delivery of the new crop?
We are $4.60 on new crop corn. We are $11.34 on new crop beans today, Dave.
Thank you very much, Kay.
You're welcome.
Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. The state of Illinois is pitching in to help communities hit by flooding. About 200 residents have been forced out of homes after the Iroquois River flooded its banks. Boats and officers from the State Department of Natural Resources are helping with evacuations in the Watsika area. The state is sending 10,000 sandbags to Mahomet, where the Sangamon River threatens to flood. And state officials are assessing flood conditions in Livingston County, where the mayor of Pontiac has asked for help. Governor Blagojevich says he's directed the State Emergency Management Agency to work with local authorities to provide the help. Heavy rainfall earlier this week caused flooding on several rivers in the state. At least one person has died in Illinois, as well as three people in flooding in northern Indiana. Illinois lawmakers are back in Springfield this afternoon. Both the House and the Senate are scheduled to be in session. The House is expected to consider a public transit bill that's designed to provide a permanent funding solution for Chicago-area commuter agencies. Former death row inmates who claim they were tortured by police in Chicago will share in a nearly $20 million settlement approved by the Chicago City Council today. The settlement ends lawsuits brought by Stanley Howard, Aaron Patterson, Leroy Orange, and Madison Hobley. The U.S. Supreme Court appears to be reluctant to strike down Indiana's requirement that voters show photo identification before they're allowed to cast a ballot. The justices heard arguments yesterday over the law that's backed by Republicans as a prudent way to deter voter fraud. Democrats and civil rights groups call it a thinly veiled effort to discourage elderly, poor, and minority voters. Paul Smith, who represents the challengers, told the justices that there's no evidence of in-person voter fraud in Indiana. State Solicitor General Thomas Fisher said the vast majority of Indiana voters easily comply with the law. Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Antonin Scalia indicated strong support for the Indiana law. Parkland College has finished a banner year for fundraising. The community college in Champaign says it's raised $150,000 more than the previous year, up to $655,000. The Parkland College Foundation uses proceeds for scholarships and endowments, as well as capital projects, including renovations at Starkle Planetarium. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner, the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Let's begin down in South America, where today I saw private estimates for their soybean crop of 58 to 59 million metric tons. It's going down.
That's right, and there's a lot of good reason for that. Although, you know, I don't think the situation in the soybean country is locked in place. We could easily start seeing rain occur anytime in the next couple of weeks and have it continuously in the forecast and actually verifying. We probably would end up with a pretty good crop still. So it's still just early enough. I don't think that the decline is irreversible, but we're not far away from that point. We certainly have to see rains starting to become more consistent and persistent across the region over the next couple of weeks in order to maintain as much production potential as we can. The early corn and sunseed crops have already lost some of their production potential. It's been a very stressful year in Argentina thus far, although I have to admit that there have been two what I would consider million-dollar rains that have occurred in the last few weeks that have really saved that crop. It came close to being very seriously stressed on two different occasions, and rain developed at the last minute and kept it from going over the edge. And so at this point, we've lost a little yield potential, and it looks like we'll still be fighting dryness in Argentina on a periodic basis through the end of this month and into February, with really the last days in January and early February probably being the most stressful period, believe it or not.
Parts of northeastern Brazil are the parts that need the most rain at this point? Or?
Yes, and actually it's not nearly as big a deal as it was a few days ago.
Oh.
Portions of Minas Gerais, northern Minas Gerais and Bahia have been trending dry for the past 2 or 3 weeks. And just earlier this week, Monday and Tuesday, we saw rain occur across both those areas, fixing the topsoil temporarily and taking away a great deal of the concern there. Now, we are going to trend drier in that northeast part of Brazil again over the next couple of weeks, but it's going to obviously take a little while for the ground to firm up enough again to be an issue. And the only other place that the soil is firming up at the moment is in Rio Grande do Sul, very typical of La Nina years to have the far south and extreme northeast of Brazil to turn dry like this. But neither area thus far has been anywhere near significant enough to really damage the production potential. And the majority of Brazil is poised to do very well at this point.
Let's turn our attention to the soft wheat crop areas and ask you whether or not you feel that cold temperatures, which are projected to come our way, might have any impact on that crop.
Well, I think we're probably going to be all right. The advertised cold is still a full week away, and we have a couple of snow events that are going to separate us from that time period. So we should put enough snow back on the ground that I think this soft wheat crop will be adequately protected. There's still a considerable amount of debate about just how cold it will get when we get into that colder period. It looks like it'll be sometime after the 17th of this month that we'll see the coolest weather coming in. And we have a trend model here that we run on a regular basis, and that trend model is suggesting that it really is not going to be in that particular part of the month that's going to be coldest. It might actually be in the last days of January. So we might start moving into a cooler bias period, but it may actually be a week or so later that we really get downright nasty cold. But anyway, in answer to your question, I do not believe that winter kill will be much of an issue with this first round of cold air coming back at us in about a week or so. I do believe that there will be sufficient snow around to protect us, or the temperatures won't be cold enough to be an issue anyway.
Thanks, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner, Senior Agricultural Meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets. This is Dave Dickey.